This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It is certainly not over yet. In fact, this last day of the campaign is one of the busiest. President Bush and Senator Kerry are hopscotching battleground states all day and late into the evening. Their focus is on getting their supporters to the polls rather than changing anyone's mind this late in the campaign. There are millions of newly registered voters. Interest in this election is greater than anything that's been seen in decades, and a race that nearly all the polls show is a statistical dead heat. Stay with us this hour as we check in on those polls, visit some battleground states, and talk about some of the big issues on the ballot. Also, we also want to hear from you. Have the campaigns contacted you? How? If you're a voter, an activist, a poll watcher, especially if you're in a battleground state, give us a call. Have you voted already? How busy was it? The number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. With us here in Studio 3A is Doug Chapin, director of electionline.org, a non-advocacy website that provides news and analysis on election reform. And thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And we're going to start this hour with the candidates, so to speak. Both President Bush and Senator Kerry made stops today in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, illustrating the importance of that upper Midwest state, where we hear it's been raining. Joining us now from Milwaukee are Perry Bacon. He's following the Kerry campaign for Time Magazine. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
And also with us is Anne-Elise Henzel, news producer for NPR affiliate WUWM in Milwaukee. She was at President Bush's rally a few hours ago, and thanks to joining us.
Thank you.
Perry, let's begin with you. Senator Kerry, I gather, just wrapped up his speech. Anything unusual, anything different today?
No, he's speaking a little shorter. His speech is a little shorter now, about 15 minutes rather than 25 as normal. But otherwise, a lot of rain today, of course, so he's trying to get the crowd out of the rain. But otherwise, pretty standard speech, talking about how important it is to turn out to vote, most important election of a lifetime, things like that.
Mm-hmm. How was the turnout?
The turnout was pretty big for it to be this rainy. I can't give you a crowd. There were several thousand people here, which is pretty good considering the how much rain was coming down.
Obviously, you've been traveling with the campaign for a while. What's the mood? How is it being changed over the last few days?
There was a little bit of concern from the aides Friday when the sort of the Bin Laden tape came out. There was a little worry. They weren't sure how that was going to play with the electorate. But since then, I think they're optimistic now. They're still cautious. They're more optimistic now. Since I think Friday was a little bit of a down moment. But otherwise, they've been optimistic all week, and they're optimistic that they'll have a big turnout tomorrow.
Now to you, Anne-Elise. President Bush, left Milwaukee, I think, before that Kerry rally got started. He's off to yet another rally elsewhere. But about 2 hours ago, you were, tell us about what happened.
Well, this rally was really interesting because it seemed to me almost as if Bush already feels as though he is going to win again. It was really a big pep rally with red, white, and blue balloons, very festive. Organizers say that they had 11,000 tickets that they distributed, and from the look of it, most of those people who got tickets came. It was colorful and festive with a lot of sign waving and a lot of dancing around to Brooks and Dunn and the Oak Ridge Boys that appeared before the president took the stage.
Mm-hmm. Now, again, anything different in is this the standard stump speech that we heard from President Bush today?
It was pretty standard. He touched on uncommon themes that he's been making, such as saying that he's making progress in the war on terror, and he's made improvements in education. The economy is coming back because he's lowered taxes. And the president says that John Kerry would raise taxes and take health care decisions out of the hands of doctors and patients, a lot of things that we've already heard. But one thing I thought was interesting was that the president made a special appeal for Democrats who might have lost faith in their party to decide to vote for him instead. And he also mentioned minority groups and said that Democrats have long taken minority groups for granted, and if those minorities are tired of that, then they should vote for him tomorrow.
And every indication, as you were saying, of supreme confidence in the president's camp.
Very confident, and the crowd appeared to be very confident, too. Some people were even doing the wave like you do at sports games with their big W signs and their Bush-Cheney yard signs, and there were frequent cheers, standing ovations, people yelling out 4 more years, and even the occasional chant of USA, USA in the crowd.
Perry Bacon, I wanted to ask you, as you travel with the campaign, and does it feel like you're in a bubble of sorts? Do you ever have any exposure to what the other side is doing?
Not really. I mean, we get lots of emails from the Bush campaign telling us, you know, what's going on with them and what they feel like Kerry misstated something or flip-flopped on something. We get lots of emails from them, and occasionally they call us, but not much as far as, I mean, most of the crowds we're at this point are very much converted. You know, Kerry is speaking to committed Democrats who will vote for him.
And similarly, I assume, Annalise, with President Bush.
Yeah, what's interesting about these events is that the press and public have to get in so early that often you don't see what's happening outside in terms of protests or, you know, any message that the other candidate is getting out. You just end up seeing the press releases later or seeing footage of the opposite candidate appearing. What made this Milwaukee appearance kind of unusual today is that the president and John Kerry were speaking just about three blocks away from each other, literally down the street from each other. So this was a case where some of the supporters of each of the candidates did run into each other and had a chance to yell messages back and forth at each other on their way to or from their respective rallies. But other than that, I think that both the crowd and reporters are pretty insulated in terms of who you're sent to cover.
Mm-hmm. And in that respect, I guess we should be glad it was raining pretty hard in Milwaukee today.
There was a good number of people out there, though, even though it was raining. They were braving the cold drizzle, and one group was yelling 4 more years, and the other group was yelling 1 more day.
Perry Bacon, where are you off to next?
We're going to Detroit, Michigan next. I think Stevie Wonder is going to be there, and then to Cleveland, Ohio tonight, where Bruce Springsteen will be, and then an airport rally in Toledo briefly, and Kerry's going to sleep tonight in La Crosse, Wisconsin. He's going to wake up there in the morning and then go to Boston after that.
And I assume you're also going to get a chance to sleep tonight and deep into tomorrow, the sleep of the just.
Not much sleep. We're going to get up pretty early. I'm going to get in about 3 a.m. and then get up pretty early tomorrow. But I think after Tuesday, I'll sleep a lot.
Perry Bacon, thanks very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Perry Bacon reports for Time Magazine. He's covering the Kerry campaign. And Annalise Henzel, thank you as well.
Thank you.
Annalise Henzel joined us from WUWM in Milwaukee, where she attended President Bush's rally earlier today. So both candidates being there in Wisconsin. And Doug Chapin, we tend to think of Wisconsin, I guess, as historically a Democratic state. It's one of those, well, along with Minnesota and Iowa, they're all up for grabs this year.
That's right. I mean, I think at the beginning of the campaign, people believed that sort of the big three were going to be Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Florida. And here at the latest stages of the end game, they've been joined by some surprising names, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa. And the campaign seemed to be fighting out those states as fiercely as they are some of the bigger three states around the country.
If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@npr.org. And let's talk with Van, and Van's calling from Salt Lake City.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My personal fantasy this election is to basically see a reversal of what happened last year. In other words, to see Bush win the popular vote and carry the electoral vote. If that were to happen, does your panel believe that we may finally have some bipartisan support to eliminate the Electoral College and go with the popular vote?
Or reform the Electoral College.
Yes.
Doug Chapin?
You know, that's hard to say. I have a colleague, Richard Smolka, who publishes the Election Administration Reports, and he said for decades when he taught political science classes that if we were to ever have another case like in 1876 where one candidate won the popular vote and the other candidate won the electoral vote, that you would see an immediate hue and cry to change the Electoral College. And as he says, I was obviously wrong. I don't know if we have a two-election streak of that happening, if that would then create a groundswell for amending or abolishing the Electoral College, or merely cement in both parties' minds the fact that the system can work for them. I do think we're starting to see interest in ways of doing the Electoral College differently. You've got the Colorado Initiative, which would allocate electoral votes proportionally, and you've got two states, Maine and Nebraska, which allocate electoral votes by congressional district, giving the each individual district electoral vote to the candidate that wins that district, and then giving the two bonus votes, if you will, to the candidate who wins statewide. If we have an election that's as close as many people believe, you could see other states looking to follow Maine and Nebraska's lead.
And there are others who say, wait a minute, maybe we should have a constitutional amendment to prohibit the states divvying up their votes like that. There's all kinds of reform proposals in the air. There was one in the paper just yesterday called the drop two proposal. In other words, that the extra electoral votes awarded to small states for their senators, maybe if we just drop that, this analysis shows that small states would still have disproportionate effect, but much less of one.
That's right. And I think as much as students of civics learn about the Grand Compromise that gave birth to the House and Senate, I don't think people always realize the extent to which small states are overrepresented in the Electoral College. I can't predict how individual states would react to that, but I would be willing to bet that if that drop two proposal were to gather steam, that some of its most adamant opponents would be the smaller states who already are fear being swamped by a popular vote wave.
And one of those smaller states, at least in terms of population, Van, is Utah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, Van, thanks very much for the
Thank
phone
you.
Call. Bye-bye. Bye. Let's talk now with Shannon, and Shannon's calling from Columbus, Ohio.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
You had asked previous, if I live in Columbus, Ohio, and we've been been sort of a comical bombardment of get-out-the-vote campaigners, in addition to receiving two, I want to say they were not quite computer, but they were definitely automated surveys requesting our opinions on certain ballot initiatives. I think Ohio has, I think it's like a Protect Marriage Act or some such. As a result, I think of the way that we responded to those surveys, we've gotten telephone calls from Laura Bush, from Barbara Bush, from our Secretary of State, Ken Blackwell, and from Arnold Schwarzenegger. And it's gotten so ridiculous, actually. My husband actually almost hung up on the real person that called us because we were prepared to just listen to the spiel and didn't realize it was a live body at the other end of the phone.
Doug Chapin, is that how some of these calls are allocated by the campaign?
I think so. I mean, a lot of these campaigns are based on what's known as targeting, identifying people who are either going to vote for you or likely to vote for you, and then targeting your message accordingly. I was on a call-in show with a national public radio station, WHYY, in the Philadelphia area. Yeah. After my appearance, as it were, had an email from a woman who said she had voted in the Democratic primary in Pennsylvania, and after that had been bombarded with Republican materials exhorting her to vote for the president and for the Republican Party's candidates, and wondered why that was. And I said my only guess, without knowing the facts, was that she had mistakenly been marked down as having voted as a Republican in that primary. And as someone who had voted as a Democrat for years and then suddenly had switched to the Republican Party, it didn't surprise me that she would get lots of contact. Wouldn't be surprised if we're seeing similar things like that around the country.
You're looking forward to a respite, both in terms of the phone and TV commercials, Shannon?
My husband heard a little snippet on the I'm not sure where this factoid came from, but it was someone had actually calculated the number of political ads that had been broadcast in Columbus, Ohio alone since the beginning of the campaign season, and I believe it was 18,000 on both political or local and national issues.
Well, good luck tomorrow, and congratulations on the respite. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's see if we can squeeze in one more call before the break. Michelle is with us in Orono, Minnesota.
Good morning. I'm having a really fun time with this. We went and saw George Bush on Saturday at the Target Center and had a great time. He was very inspirational. And then when we got out, we were kind of accosted by some Kerry supporters and made us even feel more strongly. My three boys and I are going to go on a parade this evening with our signs and our shirts that say Debbie on them. And then tomorrow we'll be going door to door. And we, too, have gotten many, many phone calls, but from both sides. It's kind of curious. So I think it's evidence that we're definitely in one of those swing states.
How old are your boys?
They're 3, 5, and 7.
So they're going to be pretty excited about politics, you figure?
My littlest one, he's 3. He was George Bush for Halloween.
Michelle, thanks very much for the call. Have a good time tomorrow.
Thanks.
We'll have more on the election day, which comes tomorrow, of course, when we come back from a short break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. With us is Doug Chapin of electionline.org. And let's turn now to what could be the swingiest of battleground states, Florida. Leslie Clark has been covering the presidential campaigns all fall for the Miami Herald. She's with us now from her office in Miami Beach. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Understandably, voters in Florida, nobody wants to see a repeat of what happened 4 years ago. What are they doing to avoid it?
Well, I think we've had early voting here for the last 2 weeks, and the numbers have just been astounding. People have been heading to the polls in record numbers to early vote, and I think a lot of that is driven by the hope that we don't have to go through a repeat of 2000.
And I gather there's some degree of political advertising on television and radio stations there in Florida.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's impossible to miss it. It's like back to back. It's either the candidates themselves or it's the independent groups or it's environmental groups. It's just nonstop.
Well, at this point, given the deluge, is this money wasted?
No, I think people are really interested. I mean, I think people are turned into it. I mean, you can definitely see that by the long lines at some of the polling places. We've had reports of people standing in line for, 2 and 3 hours, bringing books and knitting needles and snacks to keep them going as they waited to vote.
I don't mean to spoil the party, but any problems thus far?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had a couple of flare-ups, a couple of ugly moments at some of the polling sites. We had the in Palm Beach County, of all places, they had a freelance photographer arrested, handcuffed, and dragged off yesterday for apparently photographing people waiting in line to vote. The supervisor of elections there has said that she doesn't want people interviewing or taking pictures of people waiting to vote. She's apparently had complaints about that. And then, of course, we have both sides hurling charges back and forth at each other about either the Democrats accusing the Republicans of suppressing the vote and the Republicans accusing the Democrats of not caring enough that fraudulent voters could vote.
Now, there are also a lot of superstars, both cultural and political, visiting Florida. Bill Clinton is there?
Yeah, we had Bill Clinton was here on Monday night for Senator Kerry, and then he was sort of bookended by Bruce Springsteen was here in Miami on Friday night for Kerry.
And there is also a very critical Senate race. Bob Graham, a Democrat, is retiring. That seat is open. How close is that?
That close pretty much mirrors the presidential race. All the polls show that neck and neck, about 46-46. That's between the president's former housing secretary, Mel Martinez, and Florida's former education commissioner, Betty Castor. And the thinking is on that it will, so as the presidential race goes, it will have a lot to do with the turnout in the Senate race as well.
But is everybody expecting a very long night and maybe long into the next days and heaven help us weeks?
Yeah, I think so. I think everybody's sort of resting up today and preparing for a long, drawn-out slog towards some sort of a result on Tuesday or, God forbid, on Wednesday.
Leslie Clark, good luck.
Thank you.
Leslie Clark, a political reporter for the Miami Herald, was with us from her home office in Miami Beach. Let's talk now with Amy, who's calling from Okaloosa County in Florida.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I am listening to all of this and have been listening to your show for a couple of weeks now in preparation for tomorrow. My own experience down here has been it's so easy to vote. I did vote early. There were no problems whatsoever. I'm a single mother of four who works double shifts in critical care as a nurse. I have very little free time, but still have managed, despite moving twice in the last year and a half, to register and get my vote in. So I don't know what's going down a little further down south, but up further north it seems a little bit insane and unrealistic for all of the problems in terms of the accessibility to vote at this year.
Remind us where Okaloosa County is?
We are in northwest Florida.
In northwest, so on the panhandle?
Yes.
Okay, I get my east and west confused all the time. And so no problems voting there, no lines or no appreciable lines?
Well, I did absentee because I said I worked as a nurse.
Uh-huh.
And I made one 15-second phone call about a month ago. I got my ballot, spent 65 cents mailing it in, and it's done.
Well, Amy, thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye. This election season, all of us will weigh in on over 150 referenda and ballot initiatives tomorrow. The topics cover a wide variety of issues, ranging from stem cell research to reform of the Electoral College. Some issues, like gay marriage, may boost turnout. And joining us now with an update on what the polls say about a number of different initiatives is John Matsusaka, a professor of business and law at the University of Southern California, president of the Initiative and Referendum Institute. He's with us from the studios of member station KPCC in Pasadena, California. Try saying that three times fast. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
One of the most interesting initiatives is in Colorado. Voters are to decide whether to reform the system for electing the president, indeed a reform that would take effect this very election.
Yes, this measure started off doing very well in the polls. I think it tapped into an undercurrent of support for reforming the Electoral College. But now it's way, way behind. It's about 65% no. I think that the retroactivity of the measure, the fact that it was going to, you're asking the majority to take away their electoral votes essentially and give it to the candidate that gets the minority of the votes has doomed this measure.
And this, just to remind listeners, this would allow Colorado's electoral votes to be divvied up proportionately in terms of what, congressional district or in terms of just popular vote?
Proportional just to popular vote.
Okay. As per usual, California is home to a number of interesting initiatives, including one that would provide funding for stem cell research. Governor Schwarzenegger has come out in favor of that. If that passes, though, it would cost taxpayers some money.
The stem cell research measure is one that's gotten a tremendous amount of attention. It would authorize a $3 billion bond, which would be the largest bond ever authorized by a voter initiative. It would guarantee a constitutional right to stem cell research. It was running about even in the polls until Schwarzenegger stepped in, and the latest polls suggest that it's ahead now 54 to 37 in the latest field poll.
As you look at it, though, is it in contradiction to federal policy on this issue?
No. The federal policy, the one that Bush is associated with, is restricting the use of federal money. So it says the federal government shall not fund certain types of stem cell research. So there's no conflict here with this measure.
And finally, I think the gay marriage question is on the ballot in what, 11 states tomorrow?
That's right. There's 11 states that are voting on gay marriage. This is a measure which is fairly popular in nationwide polls. That each of these measures would define in each state's constitution that a marriage is solely between one man and one woman. The opponents of these measures thought that they might be able to defeat some of these measures, particularly in Oregon, which is a fairly liberal state. But even in Oregon, it's running well ahead in the polls, and it now looks like every one of these measures is going to pass.
And is it thought that the presence on the ballot might boost turnout in some of those states?
Well, yeah, that's one of the real interesting things. It's a bit of an unknown here. The thinking behind this was that to gay marriage is actually black voters. So there's an interesting possibility that if those voters are drawn to the poll by this measure, that might actually end up giving votes to Kerry, because those voters typically tend to support Kerry.
It is going to be an interesting election. John Matsusaka, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
John Matsusaka, professor of business and law at the University of Southern California, president of the Initiative and Referendum Institute, joined us from the studios of member station KPCC in Pasadena, California. We'll be checking back with Professor Matsusaka on Wednesday to see if his expectations prove to be correct. We're going to be speaking this hour with a couple of very prominent supporters of each side in this election. Joining us now is Howard Dean, former governor of Vermont and a former Democratic presidential candidate. And Governor Dean, nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Neil, thanks for having me on.
One thing I wanted to ask you, one of the things we're talking about is turning out the vote tomorrow. Your campaign was known for its initiative in using the Internet. Will the Internet be playing any role tomorrow?
Well, I think the Internet community is going to vote very heavily, but they, as opposed to having get out the vote, I mean, the answer is yes, it will, but not the way you might suspect. Of course, we're going to put out emails and everybody is, move on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But the real turning out the vote by the Internet is the creation of a very, very solid community that really wants change. And they have supported each other. And there's enormous energy, which has created a lot of the energy around the Kerry campaign nationally.
Now, you're speaking to us, I gather, from New Hampshire. Vermont thought to be safely in the Democratic camp. New Hampshire thought to be a little closer.
New Hampshire is very close. I actually last night, going through all the polls, came to the conclusion that whoever won New Hampshire was going to win the whole thing. I think today there's been some readjustment in some of those polls, so I don't think that's true anymore. But New Hampshire clearly is one of the most critical states. Obviously, I'm working hard along with a lot of other people here to try to get out just that extra couple of hundred votes that could make all the difference.
Democrats have always been, in terms of get out the vote efforts, the party that generally does better on that. Republicans are fighting every step of the way this time around. What are you seeing there in New Hampshire?
Well, interestingly, in New Hampshire, being fiscally conservative, the biggest issue here is probably the deficit. I think the reason George Bush is in so much trouble in New Hampshire is people just don't trust him with their money. He's run up these enormous deficits. People from New Hampshire really are pretty flinty about money. They're smart. New Hampshire's actually got a very good number of kids in with health insurance and so forth, but they really don't like taxes and they don't like profligate spending, and George Bush has really opened the spigot on spending, and they're worried about that. And I think that's one of the reasons we're doing so well. We also have a fantastic candidate for governor, John Lynch, and I think he has a pretty good chance of upsetting the incumbent Republican.
4 years ago, the electorate was divided just about down the middle. There's been so much that has changed in this country over the last 4 years. New people, new immigrants, new issues. Certainly the war on terror, the war in Iraq were not issues 4 years ago. The electorate seems to be divided pretty well 50-50 again. Why do you think?
Not quite divided the way it was, though, in the sense that we know what the president's weaknesses are. Now John Kerry is faced with the job of convincing people that they ought to change presidents. So it's a little easier to maintain yourself as an incumbent. I think if this were 2000 and there was an open seat, John Kerry would win by 10 or 15 points. But, you know, it's always the job of somebody who's running against an incumbent to make the case, and it's why it's close, but I do think we're going to win.
Yeah, it's usually portrayed as if an incumbent is running, the election is pretty well a referendum on the incumbent.
That's right, and I think the president's numbers are pretty awful. I think, frankly, his job performance is pretty awful. If you look at it, $2 trillion lost, first president in 70 years to lose jobs, stained our moral reputation in the world in ways that I haven't seen since I've been alive. You know, we can clearly do much better than this.
And Governor Dean, thank you very much. Good luck to you as you continue campaigning there in New Hampshire.
My pleasure, Neil. Thank you for having me on.
Former Governor Howard Dean, Democrat, speaking with us from New Hampshire. And now for a Bush supporter, joining us now from Salt Lake City is Republican Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah. And it's good to speak with you again, Senator Hatch.
Well, it's nice to talk to you. It's good to be with you.
Tomorrow's the big day. Utah is, I don't think there's too much doubt about which way Utah is going to go.
I think Utah is going to definitely go with George Bush. And I suspect a lot of other states are, too. And frankly, I think it's going to be a much better win for Bush this time than it was last time.
Is it important for him? We kept hearing during the campaign that he was spending more time in some areas where it was not necessarily a battleground state, but the president seemed to be interested in piling up a plurality in the national vote, that he was concerned about questions about legitimacy when Al Gore got more votes than he did 4 years ago.
Well, there's a question whether Al Gore really did get more votes than he did, because there were at least six states where there was rampant fraud, but the only one they could really afford to test was Florida. And so nobody really knows, but the fact of the matter is that I think the president would certainly want to win the majority vote, but more importantly, he needs to win the Electoral College vote.
And what are you doing to help him today, other than being on Talk of the Nation?
Well, I've been in various parts of the country, and of course I've taken a lot of radio shows over the last couple of days, and I'm doing everything I can to help him because, look, the man is a very good man. He has an inner core that most people don't have, and just a lot like Reagan. A lot of the snide comments made about President Bush were made about President Reagan, who today almost everybody admits was a great president. I think President Bush will go down in history as a great president, too, because he will have turned the tide by the time he's through with his second term against terrorism. And of course, in this world today, that's a tide that just simply has to be turned, and it can't be turned by somebody who consistently has voted against the military, against intelligence, against national security interests, which is the record of John Kerry.
We heard about the sad news about Chief Justice Rehnquist, and apparently every report is that he's doing better, but that illustrated the issue of the Supreme Court for a lot of people. That's something I know you feel very strongly about.
Well, I do, because I believe that the courts are probably the most important single issue in this matter, and you know, for the first time in history, we've had filibusters of federal judges to keep them from having a vote up and down. And that really is reprehensible, and we've just got to get around that. The courts are very important, and of course, one thing President Bush believes in is that I don't think he spends a lot of time discussing the philosophy of these people. that he appoints, but he believes that they should be people who interpret the laws, not make the laws. He believes that judges should not be making the laws, but those who are elected to make the laws ought to be making the laws. And I think you'd have a tremendously different situation, though, with John Kerry. John Kerry has said that he will have litmus tests for the first time in history. Here's a candidate for president who says he's going to have litmus tests for federal judges. Well, that's a very dangerous road to go down, and I really think that alone should be reason why people should vote against Senator Kerry.
Orrin Hatch is chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Republican from Utah. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Well, it's great to be with you. Good luck to you.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Greg is calling from White Salmon in Washington.
Hello there.
Hi, Greg.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on Talk of the Nation. The first comment I have, it's interesting how everybody, if you're on the left side or the right side or whatever these sides are, that everybody's got an opinion and tells you why you shouldn't, vote against Bush or why vice versa. And then you look at the polls. Everywhere you look, the polls are going up and down and up and down. I guess what I have to observe from Washington State, they thought Washington and Oregon were going to be swing states. I happen to live on the Columbia River, so it's both states.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found is that all of a sudden, well, we aren't swing states anymore because we're clearly voting for Kerry for change. And Orrin Hatch is on a citing about what Mr. Kerry says. And I think what the American public should do is ask one thing. Are they comfortable with George Bush and all the stuff that he's done as the chief executive officer of the United States? And if they think he has done a wonderful job and everything is rosy, then they should make a decision to support him. But if they aren't satisfied with what's going on, then they have an opportunity to create change, whoever they vote for. As far as Washington State goes and the polling and what's going on, we have a governor's race that's really supposed to be tight right now. It's between Christine Gregoire, who's the attorney general, and Dino Rossi. My prediction is this. I think the polls are wrong. Now, I'm one of those opinions, and we've got millions of opinions out there.
More opinions than we have time, Greg, if you could.
Absolutely. But bottom line is, Kerry's going to win by 7%. It's going to be the largest voter turnout in the history of the United States. And why he's going to win is because all the people that have registered, and what Howard Dean said, all the people have worked the Internet.
Okay. Greg, thanks very much for the phone call. At one time, Washington was considered, Doug Chapin, a swing state. No longer?
No longer, to my understanding. Washington has fallen off the list of states that you heard a lot about around the country. The battle seems to be centered mostly on the Midwest with stopovers in Florida.
When we come back from the break, a report from another swing state, Pennsylvania, also where the race is reported to be a dead heat. And we'll, of course, take more of your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also email us, TOTN@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. With us here in Studio 3A is Doug Chapin of electionline.org. And, well, joining us now from Pennsylvania, a critical state for both presidential candidates, is Tina Moore, a reporter with the Philadelphia Inquirer. She's been covering the front lines. Thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
You've been writing lately about the passion of the ground war there in Pennsylvania. Who are some of the people you've been talking to?
Well, I tell you, I talked to a few people who just seemed so eager to hurry up and make a decision so they can get through this. There's been a barrage of advertisements here and thousands of volunteers out knocking on doors and calling people from phone banks. I talked to some of the volunteers who said that they just don't want to wake up on election day if their candidate isn't president, which is just really surprising to hear that much passion in anybody's telling of the election.
I happened to be up in Pennsylvania in the Allentown area over the weekend, and lots of stories about people stealing lawn signs, lots of energy.
Yes, definitely. And as the ads get more and more critical, I think people just want to get through this. They really want it to be over. They want a clear decision, too.
Now, how does Pennsylvania break down in terms of voters? Do people in the middle vote like people on the fringes?
Oh, no. In fact, Pennsylvania is really a microcosm, I think, of the country, where you have Pittsburgh in the west and Philadelphia in the east, two urban areas with strong suburbs, especially Philadelphia. Those voters tend to go for the Democratic candidate in a presidential race, where the voters in the middle of the state, Harrisburg and its
surrounding suburbs and north of there, State College, where the, Penn State University is located, tend to go for the Republican candidate in a presidential race.
And its last polls I saw divided right down the middle.
Yes, yes, just like the country.
And what about the get-out-the-vote efforts? Obviously, in parts of Pennsylvania, very strong union contingents.
Absolutely. And that's the interesting thing about places like the northeast part of the state, where you have Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, places like this, where they've lost a lot of the people there have lost jobs and businesses have moved away, yet they tend to be socially conservative. So it's hard to tell which way it's going to go. And you have some of that in the middle of the state, too, as well as in the suburbs.
And are there very unusual get-out-the-vote efforts this time around?
I did notice on Halloween night, I live in Philadelphia here, that some of the trick-or-treaters who came to my door had literature, campaign literature with them. I thought that was interesting.
Was that the trick or the treat?
I think that was the trick. I don't know. Call me a cynic.
Any predictions on which way you think Pennsylvania is going to go tomorrow?
Oh, I wouldn't even try. No.
Tina Moore, I hope you get some sleep soon.
Thank you.
Tina Moore is a political reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and she joined us from her office in Philadelphia. And let's get another caller on the line. Bob is calling from Iowa City in Iowa, another swing state.
Hey, good afternoon. You're having a good day, I hope.
I hope so.
This has been a strange one for me. I tried to register at the beginning of last month. I did, and then I found out that somehow it wasn't registered that I had registered, so I had to take some paperwork down there to prove that I did. But that was on the 6th of last month. Now, like just yesterday, somebody called me from the Democratic Party to ask who I supported. And technically, I don't really support either one, but I did vote for John Kerry.
And
I don't like Bush's policies so much.
And what was the problem with the registration?
It actually had to do with my personal life, as I had a felony years ago, and then I had my citizenship restored, but I had to take that down there and prove it to him, I guess, to show what it was. So, and then this morning, of all things, I was talking to my doctor on the phone, and I got a recorded message from Bill Clinton, which I thought was amazing, to be honest.
So they are reaching out to you, even though you've already voted.
I did. I actually absentee voted, actually.
So the badgering, I guess, never stops. Though it's sometimes nice to get a call from the former president of the United States.
I was pleased as punch. I mean, to be honest, I mean, it was a recorded message, but he didn't advocate who I should vote for, which was really good. He just mentioned about critical times and about getting out and voting was the only message he really gave. So that was really nice as well. He wasn't like pandering.
Bob, thanks very much.
No, thank you very much. Have a great day.
Bye-bye. Doug Chapin, this issue of voters with felony records, this was controversial last time around, especially in Florida. Is that going to be another factor tomorrow?
I don't know that it'll be a factor tomorrow, but it's certainly something that has played a role in election reform, certainly in the last 4 years. We do know that the attempt to purge the Florida voter list of felons, which was problematic in 2000, was problematic again in 2004. The issue of whether or not convicted felons may get their civil rights restored in order to cast ballots is a big issue around the country. I do know that in Virginia, the governor recently restored voting rights or civil rights to about 2,000 former felons, which was the first time that had been done in the Commonwealth in quite a while.
In that particular Commonwealth, Virginia?
In that particular Commonwealth.
Okay, let's get another caller on the line. Todd is with us from Ithaca, New York.
Hi. I wanted to ask you what effect, well, you hear a lot about the polls being split 50-50,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to know what effect having people here that, I'm sorry, hold on. What effect does hearing that the polls are 50-50 have on voters? Since the polls are based on likely voters, meaning people who voted in the past, isn't that a little misleading to the public?
Doug Chapin, yeah. I mean, does the tightness of the race cause more people to come out?
I think you get as many different answers as you get voters. I do think that in the current environment where the nation seems to be divided so evenly, that no one is going to take the chance that the failure to vote is going to cost their candidate. That said, there was a very interesting discussion on one of the online magazines last month about whether or not any individual vote was worth it, given the small probability that your vote would tip the result. That finding by one economist sparked a torrent of opposing views that there were more to casting ballots than just determining who the winner was. So I would be very surprised if anyone was terribly discouraged by the fact that their vote might be important.
Mm-hmm. And another aspect of Todd's question, and that is different polls decide who is a likely voter different ways.
Exactly right, and as I am a process guy by nature and by personality, and I've been fascinated by the extent to which this 50-50 election has given incredible scrutiny to all facets of the process. We're starting to see different polls being dissected as who they called, how they classify someone as a likely voter, when they ask who they're voting for president, what other questions they asked. It's almost like you can't follow the polls without a scorecard when the polls are supposed to be the scorecard themselves.
Todd, is the tightness of the race convincing you to get out and vote, even though New York's electoral votes are mostly counted in the Kerry column?
I guess I might dispute the fact that it's actually 50-50, since it is just based on these likely voters. And I think that it would have a...
I think, just to correct you, I think registered voters also, Doug Chapin, split just about 50-50.
And that's part of the problem, is that just about every group that you ask, it seems to be 50-50. Now, are we asking all the right people? Are we talking to people who don't have cell phones? Are we talking to new voters whose numbers we might not yet have? There are lots of things that we don't know that we don't know.
Yeah, but Todd, you raise an interesting question. Is the electorate who we think the electorate is? And we may find out something surprising tomorrow.
Right. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
We're going to be talking more about the election. And, of course, tomorrow you can join us to talk about the first and most important president of the United States. George Washington Joseph Ellis is going to be here to talk about the indisputable and indispensable figure in American politics and talking about his contributions to this country. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. In Ohio, two judges have ruled that the campaigns cannot place election monitors in polling places tomorrow. The Ohio Republican Party, which has plans to deploy hundreds of monitors throughout the state, has already announced that they will appeal the decision. In the face of these ongoing legal battles, election officials still have to prepare for tomorrow's election. Joining us now is Michael Sciartino, director of the Mahoning County Board of Elections. He joins us from their headquarters in Youngstown, Ohio. Thanks very much for being with us. Hello, Mr. Sciartino. Mr. Sciartino is not with us. We hope to get him back later and talk about that. But in the meantime, let's get another caller on the line. And let's go to Jamie. Jamie's calling from Milwaukee.
Afternoon from chilly Milwaukee. I just spent about a good 3 hours in the cold and in the rain with thousands of other people who had turned out to see John Kerry. As you mentioned earlier in your program, Bush was also here this morning, but all his people were inside in a nice conditioned arena. And so I think it just spoke to the tenacity of the Kerry supporters and the fact that people will not be deterred from turning out at the polls.
And why did you think it was so important to turn out in the rain today?
I think it was just, it's important to see other people who are in the same camp as you and that hold your values, and it's just important to come together at a time like this when we're being told all around us how divided we are. I think it's important to be with like-minded folks. It's very encouraging.
Okay, Jamie, thanks very much. And tomorrow, are you just voting, or are you going to be helping other people to vote?
I'm actually help turn out the vote, getting people to the polls, and just being present wherever we're needed.
Okay, thanks very much for the call.
Peace.
Bye-bye. Let's talk with Roberta. Roberta's calling from Anchorage in Alaska.
Hi, I'm actually calling about our senatorial race here in Anchorage.
Yes?
It is down the middle, 50-50. And your last caller talking about turning out for Kerry, I'm out canvassing right now for our Democratic senatorial candidate, and it's snowing, and we've had many, many piles of snow here, but we're all still out canvassing, trying to get the vote out tomorrow.
That's former Governor Tony Knowles, who's running against Lisa Murkowski, who's replaced her father in the United States Senate.
Yes, so it's a very contested senatorial race that we're dealing with here, and I just want everybody to know that the phone calls on any level, I know how they're getting to be so annoying, but it's just so important to get the word out to vote.
Okay. Roberta, thanks very much. Good luck to you and everybody working for every candidate tomorrow.
Yes, exactly. Thank you, Neil.
Bye-bye. Now let's go back. I think we do have Michael Sciartino with us on the phone from Youngstown, Ohio, and it's good to have you on the program.
Hi. Thank you. It's a pleasure.
We mentioned earlier those rulings of the federal judges. Has that forced you to change any of your preparations for tomorrow's election?
Well, you know, we've done a lot of
training in terms of how to, you know, encounter challenges, what challengers are supposed to do on election day, and how our poll workers are to deal with challengers in initiating challenges and whatnot. If challengers are not permitted in the polling place, I guess that makes it simple for boards of elections and poll workers to, I guess, not worry about it.
And this may yet change subsequent to other courts, though.
Of course. You know, this is a district court decision coming out of two districts in Ohio. It's my understanding that some type of appeal is taking place. I haven't confirmed that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, it could be overturned by the 6th District or the next appellate level, wherever they may file that. So I guess we're still in a state of flux.
And I guess those courts are deciding whether the presence of those monitors would be intimidating to voters. But what about two poll workers? Do you find it intimidating to have lawyers sitting next to you?
Well, you know what? During our training, and I conducted a lot of the training myself, the predominant question was, you know, what are we going to expect from these people? I mean, they're hearing a lot of rumors. Sure, it could be very intimidating. A lawyer versus a very, if you will, you know, motivated poll worker or challenger.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, what we're trying to do, and I've done training on the Democrat side of things. I was invited in to sort of take part in, from a Board of Elections standpoint, you know, that challengers at the polling locations are sworn at oath, and if they step outside that oath, under Ohio law, the presiding judge and the poll workers at the individual precincts can expel them.
Well,
so we try and keep people civil. We try and keep the situation civil. The poll workers are trained in event that the challengers are to remain, and we're going to have to deal with it the best we can.
Good luck tomorrow.
Hey, thank you very much.
Michael Sciarratino, director of the Mahoning County Board of Elections in Ohio, joined us from Youngstown. And Doug Chapin, briefly, we can expect lawsuits the rest of today, tomorrow, end of Wednesday?
Exactly. And my understanding is that there was an appeal of those two court cases to the Sixth Circuit roughly noon today. We're on a very compressed time schedule. We may know the result of that appeal sometime later today. But I think Mr. Sciarratino is right. You have to prepare for whatever comes and then do it right when it does come.
Well, stay tuned to NPR News for the latest on all of those developments. Thanks very much, Doug Chapin, for being with us. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.